You're at 300 feet. The engine you trusted 30 seconds ago just went quiet. Not a cough, not a stumble, quiet. And now you have about 4 seconds to decide something that will determine whether you walk away from this airplane. That's where we're living today. This is Radio Hangar, and this is Traffic Pattern. I'm Pattern, and I want to spend the next little while with you on the one emergency that scares me more than almost anything else in light airplane flying. It's the engine failure right after takeoff. And more specifically, it's that seductive, deadly idea that you can just turn around and go back to the runway you left. Pilots call it the impossible turn. Some instructors don't like that name because they say it isn't always impossible, and they're right, technically. But I'll tell you why the name has stuck around, and why I think it's earned. Let's walk through this together. First, let me get one thing out of the way. Learning to fly is expensive, and it's hard, and the takeoff is the part where a lot of us relax too early. We spend all this money on training and we treat the climb out like it's already over. Wheels up, flaps up, exhale, and that exhale is exactly where this accident lives. Before we get deep into it, let me tell you about the folks who help keep this show on the air. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that? Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, and let's be honest, in this world you take your wins where you can get them, aviationsoul.com. Okay, let's set the scene properly, because scenario is everything here. You're in a Cessna 172, nice day. You've done your run-up, everything was in the green, oil pressure good, mags checked, controls free and correct. You line up, you push the throttle in, airspeed's alive, and you rotate, you climb out at your best rate, maybe 74 knots, nose up, trees, at the far end of the field, getting smaller. 200 feet, 300 feet, and the engine quits. Now, here's what actually happens to a human being in that moment, and I want to be honest with you about it, because nobody was honest with me. Your body dumps adrenaline, time compresses, and your brain, which has spent your whole life on the ground, screams one word at you, home. The runway behind you is home. It's pavement, it's familiar, it's where you just were, and every instinct you have wants to wheel that airplane around and get back to it. That instinct will try to kill you. Let me tell you why, and let's do it with numbers you can actually feel. When you turn back toward the runway, you're not making a gentle 180, you're making something closer to a 270-degree course reversal, because you have to turn back and then turn again to line up with the pavement, and you're offset from the center line the whole time. That's a lot of turning. And turning costs you two things you do not have right now. It costs altitude, and it costs time. Here's the part that gets people: to make that turn tight enough to get back, you have to bank steeply, and the steeper you bank, the higher your stall speed climbs. In a level 30-degree bank, your stall speed goes up about 7%. At 45 degrees, it's up about 19%. At 60 degrees of bank, your stall speed is over 40% higher than wings level. So picture the pilot who's turning back. Engine's dead, nose wants to drop. They pull to keep the nose up, because the ground is right there, and pulling feels like living. They bank harder because the runway's sliding past and they need to tighten it up. Steep bank, hard pull, dead engine, low airspeed. That is the exact recipe for a cross-controlled stall. The airplane stalls, one wing drops, and now you're in an incipient spin at 300 feet. There is no altitude to recover, none. The airplane hits the ground in a nose-low, banked attitude, and it is almost always fatal. That's the impossible turn. And that's why it earned the name. It's not that the geometry can never work, it's that the geometry tempts you into a stall spin at the one altitude where a stall spin cannot be survived. So let's talk about what you actually do instead. And then we'll talk about how you practice, because the FAA and a lot of good instructors have changed their tune on this in recent years, and I think it's for the better. Rule 1. And write this on your heart. When the engine quits on climb out, the first move is to lower the nose. Not maintain, lower. You need to trade that climb attitude for gliding airspeed before the airplane decelerates toward a stall. Best glide, or in many airplanes, something close to it. Your energy is your life right now, and airspeed is energy. Pushing the nose over when the ground is coming up at you is the least natural thing in the world, and it is the single most important thing you will do. Rule 2, land more or less straight ahead. Somewhere in a cone, maybe 30 degrees either side of the nose. A field, a road, the trees if that's what you've got, and I know landing in trees or a bean field sounds terrible. But here's the truth that the accident data has been telling us for decades. People survive controlled crashes into lousy terrain, wings level, under control, at the slowest possible speed. What kills people is the stall spin from the turn back. The trees ahead of you are far more forgiving than the ground you'll hit trying to get back to the runway. Fly it all the way into the crash. That's an ugly phrase, and I want it to be ugly, so it sticks. A wings-level arrival into a bad spot at 45 knots is survivable, a spin is not. Now, let's talk about that number everybody argues about, the turnback altitude. Here's the honest answer. And it's an answer that respects you as a pilot. There is no single magic number. Whether a turnback is even possible depends on your specific airplane, your weight, the wind, the density altitude, how fast you recognize the failure, and how disciplined your turn is. For a lot of trainers, the realistic floor is somewhere around 500 to 1,000 feet above the ground, and that's assuming you've practiced it and you execute it perfectly. Below that, you land ahead, period. And here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. That number is not something you figure out at 300 feet with a dead engine. You figure it out on the ground before you ever take the runway. It's part of your takeoff briefing. Let me give you the briefing I want you to say out loud. Every single takeoff, before you push the throttle in, not think, say, your mouth moving makes it real. On the takeoff roll, any problem before rotation, throttle idle, brakes, stop straight ahead. After liftoff, engine failure below my turnback altitude, I lower the nose and land within 30 degrees of the nose, above my turnback altitude, and only if I've briefed it, and I have the runway, I'll consider a return. Wind is out of the such and such, favoring a turn to the left. That last part matters. Turn into the wind if you turn at all, because a crosswind component during the turn helps drift you back toward the runway environment. Little edge, but you take every edge you can get. When you brief it out loud, you've already made the decision. The airplane's not surprising you anymore. You're not deciding under adrenaline. You're just executing a plan you made when your prefrontal cortex was still online. That is the whole game. The pilots who die in this accident are almost always deciding for the first time at the worst possible moment. Now let's talk about the thing that's actually changed, because this is where the training world has gotten smarter. For years, the standard advice was just, don't ever turn back, always land ahead, and we left it there. And that's not bad advice, but a lot of instructors realize that telling a pilot never to do something isn't the same as teaching them what the something actually feels like. If you've never practiced the turnback at a safe altitude, you have no idea how much sky it eats, and you have no calibration for whether it's even on the table. So the modern approach, and you'll see this reflected in how a lot of CFIs teach to the airman certification standards now, is to go practice it up high. Take your airplane, go up to a safe altitude, pick a cloud or a section line as your pretend runway heading, and at altitude, chop the power and execute the turnback. Roll into a controlled bank, hold your airspeed honest, and see how much altitude you burn to reverse course by 270 degrees. You will be shocked. Most people lose far more than they expected, and now you have a real number in your airplane flown by your hands. Now that turnback altitude in your briefing isn't a number from a magazine, it's a number you earned. And here's the safety piece I can't skip, because glossing over safety is the one thing I won't do on this show. When you practice this, you practice it at altitude, with a plan, ideally with a CFI aboard the first few times. The whole danger of this maneuver is the low altitude stall spin. So we take it somewhere with thousands of feet underneath us, where a botched attempt just means adding power and climbing back up. You do not go practice the impossible turn by actually pulling the throttle at 300 feet over the departure end. That's not training. That's the accident. Let me tie this back to the ACS, because if you're a student listening, the examiner is going to probe this. On the check ride, when you get to emergency operations, the examiner is looking for a few specific things. They want to see that you establish and maintain the best glide airspeed. They want to see you pick a suitable landing area and actually commit to it, not dither. They want to flow through your emergency checklist, the airspeed, the field, the restart attempt if you have altitude, the fuel, the mixture, the mags, the boost pump, and they want to see you make radio calls, and if there's time, a mayday. But underneath all of that, what the examiner really wants to know is whether you'll do the safe thing under pressure instead of the instinctive thing. Whether you'll lower that nose, whether you'll accept the ugly field ahead instead of grabbing for the pretty runway behind. That's airmanship. That's the whole reason the maneuver is in the standards. Let me leave you with one more scenario, because I want this to live in your hands and not just your head. You brief the takeoff. You say it out loud, feeling a little silly because your passenger's looking at you. You roll, you rotate, you climb. 200 feet. The engine quits. And because you briefed it, there's no debate. Your hand is already easing the nose down before your brain has fully caught up. You're below your turnback altitude, so your eyes go to the cone in front of you. There's a soccer field slightly right. You make one shallow, gentle turn, wings never past a coordinated bank, airspeed pinned. You pull the mixture, fuel off, master off, unlatch the door, you fly it down to the grass at the slowest speed the airplane will give you. Wings level, and you touch down under control. The airplane might be bent. You are not, and that every single time is the trade we're making. The engine ahead is the emergency. The runway behind is the temptation. Know the difference before you ever leave the ground. My thanks to the FAA's guidance on emergency operations and to the airman certification standards for the framework behind all this, and to the accident investigators whose hard-won data taught us what actually keeps pilots alive in that first 30 seconds. You can find us at RadioHangar.com. Go up with an instructor this week and fly that turn back up high just once, so the number in your briefing is yours. Fly the airplane all the way down. I'll see you back in the pattern.